Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, and I'm now joined by Jeff Abramson, who is the Deputy Director of the Arms Control Association, where he's been working to create a robust arms trade treaty. Starting on June the 27th, he'll take up a new position as coordinator of the Control Arms Secretariat. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jeff Abramson.
Thanks very much, and happy Father's Day to everyone.
Well, thank you, Jeff. The United States arms manufacturers are expected to sell about $50 billion in military hardware to foreign governments in this year, which is up nearly 50% from last year. I suppose it's pretty obvious that even though the defense cuts are promised, $400 billion, the administration is promising. Secretary Gates said he cut $300 billion, but that's really hard to find where that $300 billion was cut, given that there are more weapon systems in the Pentagon after he left than there were when he came. But the long and the short of it is, let's just assume for a moment that there'll be something more than cosmetic cuts in the defense budget here at home. I take it the military-industrial complex figures that they've got to get out there and sew up some markets.
That's certainly true, and this is the cuts that are being talked about now are certainly not unforeseen, and the defense industry has been looking for a while to see where will our competitive market or our market continue, and obviously overseas sales has been an avenue that historically has been of interest, and certainly if Congress and the U.S. government is willing to try to figure out ways to increase those foreign sales, industry is not going to be opposed to that idea. They are in it in part for the financial side, and if that market out there can be made larger, which is a question I would say actually, it is something that is on the table.
Well, we know even some of the progressive politicians, for example, Barbara Boxer supports the continuation of the production of the Boeing C-17, which the Pentagon have been trying to close that down, and Congress has been asking for more planes than the Pentagon want. And it looks like they've lucked out here with India buying 10. I signed that deal on Wednesday. Saudi Arabia's ordered $60 billion in military hardware. Australia wants 24 Seahawk helicopters. So the market's out there. When does the Paris Air Show start? Sometime this week, doesn't it?
The Paris Air Show, I believe, is underway.
It's underway. It just started, yeah. So I imagine they're all out there selling their wares. So what do you attribute to this rise in purchasing of American arms? Is it because the U.S. Has battle-proven weaponry, given all the wars we've been in lately?
Let me put this in a slightly longer historical perspective. There has been, for the last 5 years, going back actually to the Bush administration, a real increase in the effort to sell and actual countries willing to buy American arms. Whether there is going to be an actual global increase in arms sales is a slightly different question, and the trend is only mildly upward, and there are some expectations for global sales to decline as we look at a global economy that might not be as strong as it used to be. So the news out today is a bit sensationalist, but it's timely because within the United States there hasn't been a lot of conversation about the United States remaining and seeking to be the world's number one arms dealer. And the Obama administration has, in many ways, been working hard to not just continue the trend under the Bush administration, but to ramp it up, partly giving national security reasons, but also partly citing a need for the U.S. to increase its total exports as part of the economy. But what might drive this is hard to tell. It's a lot of places. It's the countries that still have money. So you're looking at India, you mentioned earlier, as an economy that's thriving. Brazil is also another one of those that actually decided not to ramp up this year, but will probably in the coming year. Those are interesting places. And Secretary Gates was recently criticizing NATO for not spending enough on its defenses. So maybe that is also an effort to get, and this has been in the news, to get NATO countries to increase their purchases. So there's many factors going on in this push. Whether the United States is going to see a huge increase, you have fluctuations from year to year. So I'm still waiting to see But as you mentioned, we did notify Congress of the $60 billion arms deal to Saudi Arabia last year, which is just sort of unprecedented in many ways.
Well, apparently the industry, the contractors, are happy with the Obama administration. Northrop's chief executive, Wesley Bush, at a recent conference in London, said to credit the Obama administration, he said the U.S. has finally started serious attempts to reform the laws and regulations governing our export control. So what's behind that praise when he says that they're making it easy to sell this stuff abroad? Or does that mean they're stopping the penalizing people from bribing? Because the arms sales to Saudi Arabia are all about hidden bribes. I mean, that is the way it works. That's the royals at the very top. That's how they make their money, by hidden kickbacks in these massive arms deals. So what's going on in terms of the Obama administration taking the gloves off, as it will? What have they done? Do you know?
Yeah, no, it is something I'm tracking closely, and it's one thing that's not gotten a lot of attention within the United States. I don't know if it's about bribes. I haven't seen that part. Obviously, the part of the conversation I'm listening to is around the economic and security interests here. This complaint about the U.S. system being old and hard to use has been long going, and there's been efforts to reform the export control system going back many decades, actually. What has actually happened in this administration of Secretary Gates has been, from the Defense Department, which has often been one of the many constituencies within the U.S. government that has said, instead of decontrolling items, we need to keep strong control. Secretary Gates has actually been making an argument that it's better for national security interests if we stop controlling so many things and only focus on the highest technology items. That'll make it easier to work with our allies, and it'll make the system move more smoothly. That's one of the pushes that was missing before the Obama administration. Now, for me, I have great concerns about what I'm seeing. I'm really seeing a decontrol agenda on the export control initiative, which means that the United States will make it much easier for things to flow out the door, including things that are still very dangerous but might be older technology. So a generation or two ago of a weapon, or guns, machine guns, that we might want to know where they're going, we might stop paying attention to where they're going out the door. So it's a very dangerous precedent, but it's certainly one that industry is happy to see happen, because it will make, in their minds, things much simpler and faster. I think there's ways the administration could maintain control over what goes out the door and still make the system better for industry.
Again, I'm speaking with Jeff Abramson, who is currently the deputy director of the Arms Control Association, and we're talking about record arms sales this year for Americans' arms manufacturers and a concerted effort to increase sales as a hedge against possible defense cuts at home. But some of this weaponry, of course, we've seen it end up in being used against defenseless people by the Tunisian regime, who we sold arms to. In Tahrir Square, it was pretty evident that there were U.S. Abrams tanks rolling around. Not that they were turned on the people, but they certainly, military hardware was used against the people in Bahrain. I don't know what's going on in Yemen in terms of whose arms are being used against whom. But clearly, this is something that must put the administration on both sides, opposite sides of the very issue that they're trying to, they're saying they want to support the Arab Spring. So these brave kids in the streets are not going to be too happy if they're, in fact, wasn't it fairly clear in the Egyptian uprising that they were holding up canisters of spent cartridges with made in the USA on them?
All those you're talking about is very good, because it's really actually shocking to me the United States representatives would be now talking about how great their military sales are, given what's happening with the Arab Spring. This is a moment where you would expect a government that was the left hand was talking to the right hand to not be emphasizing the sales, but actually be emphasizing being a responsible actor moving forward. So, you know, the Egypt example was tear gas canisters in Tahrir Square manufactured in the United States, which caught global attention. But the broader Arab Spring itself is a great example of the U.S. had provided weaponry to countries that now we'd like to see a change, certainly Tunisia and Egypt, but you have Saudi Arabia as one of our major benefactors. Bahrain and Yemen have received assistance. Syria and Libya, not so much, so the United States maybe looks better than some other countries. But for the United States, now is the moment where it should be talking about being a responsible actor. And there have been a couple administration officials who have said, we are going to look more closely as to what's happening in the Middle East. We'll try to take a case-by-case review. Some things that were in the pipeline have been slowed, but there are no details on what that is. But this moment right now is not one where I would see or expect the United States to be bragging about its sales and upping its sales, but more talking about how do we look at what's happening in the Middle East, how do we look at what's happening in the global community to support a global regime that would say, okay, there is legitimacy in arms sales, but what criteria should we take into account? And places where we can expect human rights abuses, which is part of U.S. law right now but not always followed, we should look more closely and maybe not see arms go to that region. Within the Middle East, what I would have hoped would have happened was that there would be a convening of the major suppliers to look at ways to create a better regime. At the global level, there is this push right now to create an arms trade treaty, and I'd be happy to talk about the excitement and hope that that would be, because part of the argument you always hear is that if I don't sell it, someone else will, which is part of the reason why you need other countries to also agree that these are the factors that go into a responsible arms trade.
Well, it seems that for the longest time, the Russians and to a lesser extent the Chinese have sewn up the small arms trade because of the ubiquitous AK-47 that's flooding Africa and the Third World, where countless more people die from that than anything else, I think. But, you know, some of the weaponry the U.S. has is pretty lethal, obviously. And the whole point I thought of standing up to Gaddafi was that the world could not sit idly by and watch a dictator use sophisticated military equipment against his own citizens. You know, the Syrian regime are using helicopter gunships against their unarmed demonstrators. So we know that that threshold has been crossed. But what are the likelihood of some of the really seriously damaging U.S. equipment getting into the hands of the wrong people? What's to stop it?
Well, this is where you take the long view and you try to only sell it to places you feel are stable in the first place and that have good systems in place to control the weaponry. This is why you see the countries talking about Libya, whether to arm the rebels or not, because they don't know who those people are, and they don't know whether it makes sense to arm those rebels. And that's why you'll see this issue is one that people recognize. It's not something people haven't thought about. It's true that as soon as you let go of that weapon, even if you have agreements that those aren't going to be moved on, there's a chance that they will be. So you try to very much control who you're selling them to and how they use them, but ultimately you are going to be at their mercy once they own the item. So this is where I think there are examples where the global community really has decided there are places that don't need a ton of weaponry, that it's just not in global interest. You can look at Burma or Myanmar if you want to talk about them, or North Korea, and those are extreme examples, but I'm not without hope that countries do recognize that there are places in the world where it just isn't wise to be developing them in terms of weaponry. There are many other mechanisms from economic development, democracy promotion, that should be on the agenda for countries, and it was actually in many ways heartening that as the Libyan example occurred, that the European countries that had been more responsible for arms sales, as well as Russia, decided to cancel those, that they did recognize that these really vast human rights abuses, those regimes shouldn't be rewarded. Now, as you mentioned, we're not 100% doing that. We still are supporting regimes that, even by the U.S.'s own standards, aren't meeting human rights goals.
Well, we're just in the last minute then, Jeff. I just wanted to get to your new job that you're moving to, the coordinator for the Control Arms Secretariat. And you mentioned a global regime just in the less than a minute. Can you quickly sketch that out?
Sure. At this point, all the countries in the globe are engaged in a conversation that's being sponsored by the UN to set up a legally binding international arms trade treaty that would provide guidance on what are the criteria countries should use when they make arms decisions, what types of weapons should be considered within a treaty, and how would we make that happen so that moving forward, the trade in arms is much more responsible, that the human cost of the arms trade can be reduced, and it'll be a much safer endeavor.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today in Los Angeles, Jeff Ravenson.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Jeff Abramson, who is currently Deputy Director of the Arms Control Association, and soon he'll be the coordinator of the Control Arms Secretariat. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the education racket. Don't start the talking. I could talk all night. My mind was sleeping.